Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for joining us here on AFR on this Monday, March the 11th, 2024. I'm joined today in studio by Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And good morning, Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
So, did you enjoy your week off last week?
I did.
Okay.
Had a good time.
Did you just relax or did you get some things done around the house?
Yeah, I got some things done around the house, got some additional writing done, watched some hockey.
You had your own little spring break there.
Yes. That's right. My wife and I were on spring break.
You weren't exactly raucous, but.
No, we went, let's see, where'd we go? We went to Kroger.
Whoa.
And Walmart.
In one day?
Same day. Yeah, same day, back to back, Tim. I'm just telling you. You know, I do the finances at my house. I know
right.
Allison does them.
Yes, she does.
But,
thank the Lord.
I can sometimes be a little critical about my wife,
right? You know,
when she goes to get groceries right. And all that kind of stuff. Hey, we got to stay in the budget,
right? Sure.
Dave Ramsey might drop by, you know, that kind of thing. And then I went with her, and I thought, wow, this is scary.
You mean how much things have gone up?
Oh yeah, and so I got the I told you so.
Yeah,
a couple of times there, but
yeah. Fred, you have a good weekend?
Always.
Yeah,
always. It was nice, especially yesterday. Beautiful weather.
Yeah,
was cool, sunny.
Yeah,
perfect.
The red buds are blooming where we live.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and they're really lavender, I think.
And the Bradford pears are stinking.
Yeah. Yes. Smell like Clorox. They're
you
pretty.
You know, in our yard, we have our next door neighbor has Bradford pears that line one side of our driveway.
Okay.
And it goes all the way across our property line. And one of our Bradford pear trees is just completely dead.
Uh-oh.
And I went to look at it. I think ants got it. You know,
really?
Like fire ants and stuff at the base.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing is just dead as a doornail.
Wow.
And
ants can kill a Bradford pear.
I'm guessing that's the cause.
Wow, that you look down at the base.
Yeah, I looked out a lot of ants, and then I could see that. I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention last year, and they must have got it. So,
oh well, that's.
I could either cut that sucker down or wait for the wind to knock it over and
yeah,
get somebody else to do
it. Cut it down. All right. So I hope you had a great weekend, folks, wherever you may be going to or residing. And we just thank you again for listening to American Family Radio. A lot to talk about today. Fred, we haven't really discussed. I know the State of the Union was last week.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Thursday night?
Thursday night, yeah.
Where Joe Biden, the president, gave, you know, his talk to the nation.
He was criticized for making it sound more like a campaign speech, because I think he called my predecessor. He didn't refer to Donald Trump by his name, but 13 times he referred to my predecessor.
Yeah. And he does it like this right here. He just, he was yelling a lot.
Yes.
Like an old man who couldn't hear or something. Did you hear him, Fred? Did you watch that?
Oh, yeah.
He sounded angry at times. And
yes.
You know, like, hey, you kids, get off the grass.
Dial it back a little bit, dude.
Yeah. He is getting credit for a pretty straightforward speech. Now, some people said that, you know, he took the right drugs and he was okay. He was okay for
some
it.
People say.
Some people say.
Some people say. I don't say.
Hour and 10 minutes. There were some awkward moments for the president, because Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's the Republican congresswoman from Georgia. Some people were holding signs, say her name, And what it was referring to was the very tragic death of Lakin Riley, the nursing student in Georgia. And an illegal alien has been charged with her murder. And the Biden administration has been fairly quiet about that. And so basically, Marjorie Taylor Greene not only held a sign, but said, say her name. And so this became an unscripted moment for the president in the midst of this speech. And because some Republicans had handed out buttons, and the president received this button before beginning his speech with Lakin Riley on it. Say her name. So he did stop in the midst of this goading by Marjorie Taylor Greene and some others. And he said, yes, very tragic. Lincoln, he called her Lincoln Riley. Her name is Lakin. Yeah.
L-A-K-E-N.
L-A-K.
He called her Lincoln.
He called her Lincoln. And then he said an illegal alien, an illegal has been charged. Well, this was the sin that cannot be forgiven when it comes to a Democrat for referring to this man who has been charged as an illegal.
Right.
All right? This is verboten. And by the way, he is an illegal alien.
Yeah.
That's been proven. So it's not a factual error to call him illegal, but it is not politically correct if you're a Democrat to refer to someone. They use terms like undocumented,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. So on the weekend, Joe Biden was challenged in an interview with MSNBC about using the term illegal. This is how that went down, this interview on MSNBC. Cut number four.
Use the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakin Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the president. I regret using, and I show respect for everyone, including.
Man, a couple things. Go ahead, Ed.
I was going to say, now Trump's never referred to illegal immigrants as vermin, has he? Or has he talked about the criminals coming
across? He's talked about criminals. He's talked about people coming into this country, perhaps from mental asylums. He has used those terms.
He did say poison the blood.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Poison the blood of the country. Look it up.
I believe you. I just hadn't heard that.
But anyway, here's a couple things. One is when Biden's talking about this at the State of the Union on last Thursday night, Lincoln Riley is the head football coach at the University of Southern California. Very high profile name in college football. So Biden, talk about terrible timing thing to do. You know what I'm saying? This young lady, Lakin Riley, lost her life, and he calls her something else altogether. Now, if Trump or another Republican had done that, it would be, you'd never hear the end of it, okay? Instead, nothing is said, as far as I know, the president has not apologized for that. Now, he would. I think Biden would if his attention was called to it by the press and he was asked to correct himself on that. But here's the point. Here he's asking this interview, you referred to this man who allegedly killed this young lady in Georgia as Lakin Riley. You referred to him as an illegal, and you heard that. He's apologetic. He wished he wouldn't have done that. He wished he'd use the word undocumented. Well, instead of that, he should have been asked, do you want to correct yourself on the name of the young lady who was murdered?
Uh-huh.
And then you see what the priorities are on the left? It's don't offend the illegals. Instead, you can offend the person who was victimized and not have to apologize for it.
If President Trump or another high-profile Republican had, when referring to George Floyd, had said George Foreman, okay, and in other words,
yeah, right,
made a mistake.
Right, that's true.
They would have dragged him, that person, he or she, through the mud, demanded an apology, say, this proves you don't care that George Floyd was killed, those kinds of things. He gets, President Biden gets a pass, and instead what the left did since the State of the Union address and his statement about the illegal who killed Lake and Riley, they hammered him, forcing President Biden to apologize. I'm guessing, this is, I can't prove this, but this is the way politics works. When he agreed to do the interview, he probably, his staff probably asked that this issue be brought up so he could apologize. Mm. By the way, I will also say this. President Biden, it seems clear by this at this point that President Biden, barring something unforeseen, President Biden and President Trump are going to have a rematch.
Yes.
Here in 2024.
Yay.
And and my suspicion is that President Biden's continual referencing President Trump as my predecessor, he did mention Trump here in this interview briefly, but he's making a point of saying my predecessor. I think that is setting up his excuse for not debating Trump. I think he's going to characterize President Trump as a criminal, as a this.
But what's wrong with using the phrase predecessor?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think he is trying to make President Trump. I mean, it's okay to say my predecessor as long as you also include his name. I don't ever remember a prior president refusing to use the name of his predecessor.
Trump, not his predecessor. Listen, when it comes to calling Trump names, I have no sympathy. The man calls people names every day, all day. So, predecessor to me is, saying it's wrong.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying President Biden will eventually say, I'm not debating that guy because he's a criminal. He's been convicted. I think this is a strategy, is what I'm saying, a tactic to allow President Trump to say, I'm not debating that guy, and not even use his name. I'm not saying it's wrong to do this. I'm saying it's setting the stage for him to say, I'm not debating that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I see coming. There's no way that President Biden can get on a stage for 2 hours and talk without fumbling around and looking even worse. He's got to find a way to avoid debating, and I think he's going to use...
Personally, I don't think the debates matter at all. I don't care if they have one or not. I mean, what are we going to learn?
I think there are some that are probably undecided.
They're going to tune into that debate.
Well,
I don't think it matters.
I think that there is a danger, and I agree with you. I don't think there's going to be a debate. But I think the reason is the Democrats are scared that in a live debate that President Joe Biden would not fare well. We've seen him in action at impromptu press questioning, et cetera, that if he started to get questions that he was uncomfortable with.
Right.
That he
just start yelling.
He would begin to babble.
Whatever, doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah.
Just start yelling.
Yeah.
Make a point.
But Trump has said, he said, I'll debate you anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
Now, Trump is opening himself up to MSNBC asking questions.
Right.
CNN and all that. But Trump doesn't care anymore. He believes the mainstream media's reputation is well known amongst Trump supporters. They expect that.
Right.
So I think Trump would love to debate, have debates live. He has already said, I want four debates.
Yeah, that's not happening. They might get one, but wouldn't it surprise me if Biden just said, I'm not debating Trump or yeah. my predecessor.
Yeah.
Just because, and personally, it's just my thoughts. My thoughts, it doesn't matter. We can have the election tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people are going, vacillating, going, Trump, Biden, I just can't pick.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah. I think it's basically a referendum on Trump. And, well, Biden, too. I said the other day, the best thing Biden's got going for him is Trump. The best thing Trump's got going for him is Biden.
Biden.
Because they're both loathed by the other side so bad.
Yeah.
That, you know, they're just waiting to see who can strike out last, you know, to go, you know, to
both, use a spec. I think metaphor. Both have enormously high, unusually high unfavorability ratings.
Right. But that would tend to, seems to me, favor the challenger.
Yeah.
Because the challenger's not in office. The incumbent is.
Yes.
And if he's got bad ratings, I mean, Biden's down there in the, like, mid-30s or something like that for yeah. approval rating. That hurts. That's a more dangerous spot to be in than the challenger, which is
Oh, yeah. Trump. As opposed to 2020, there was no record. Biden didn't have a record.
Right.
Now he's got a record.
Right.
And
right.
It ain't popular.
Right.
Right.
You know, it just isn't. The border stuff, the American people right. aren't buying
right.
Biden saying it's all Republicans' fault.
Yeah.
The American people right. aren't buying that.
No, they're not buying it.
The economy is in a mess. No matter how much the Biden economists and the mainstream media try to spin the numbers, the consumer goods are up 17%.
Yeah.
Credit card debt in this country, the latest figures, $1 trillion.
That's because a lot of people are having to make ends meet with the credit card.
They are.
This is, I don't think a lot of that is probably, you know, vacations.
No.
It's we got to make the car payment, and so we got to throw it on the credit card because we don't have any money.
Yep.
And that's that. People want to blame somebody. Tim, you've always said that the president, you know, like the quarterback of a football team, the president gets too much credit when things are going well and too much blame when things aren't.
Right.
But regardless, people blame the president
yes.
for their economic
but that's
issues.
The way it is.
That's so the way speak. It is.
Yeah.
Back to what Trump said at, he said it more than once at rallies, that the illegal immigrants are, quote, they're poisoning the blood of our country, end quote.
I have not heard that. That's a bad thing to say. He just said just illegal immigrants. He wasn't
yeah,
talking
he said,
about
he
the
said
criminals.
He said they're, yes, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And he said they're poisoning the blood of our country, and he said they're all over the world, they're pouring into our country, end of quote. Now, that is a true statement.
Yeah.
Why do you think that poisoning the blood
well,
of our country?
Well, because I think – President Trump, I've said this plenty of times, President Trump is his own worst enemy when it comes to off-the-cuff statements. If he would make clear statements about what he's saying, he would not hurt himself, because it sounds like he's saying, now I'm not saying this is what he's saying, I'm just saying these kinds of statements are not well thought out. It sounds like he's saying us white people have all these people of color coming in, and we're becoming a miscegenated nation, okay? We can't mix. And that's the wrong to me, that's the wrong impression to give. What I think he should say is immigrants have been the strength of our country, and when they bring something to the table, we welcome a legally set number of immigrants into our country, but we do not want criminals. We don't want drug dealers, human traffickers. To me, that's the best way to say it. Poisoning the blood makes it sound like people from other countries are in and of themselves detrimental to our nation. And I don't think that's what this country is thought of when it thinks of immigrants. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree with that. When I heard him say that, he said it at least two or three times, I thought that sounds racist.
It does. It absolutely does. And he remember the Charlottesville statement, which was twisted beyond all recognition by the media, and you know the Jimmy Kimmels of the world and all that. I was tired of hearing about it. He did not say there are good people on both sides. There are good Nazis. He was not saying that. But if you're not clear and concise in what you say, you're allowing the other side to twist what you say. And that's the kind of thing that could wind up in an ad.
Right.
An anti-Trump ad.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Well, another election issue is going to be the Middle East. And Biden's relationship, some say deteriorating relationship with Israel. He was caught after his speech, a State of the Union speech last Thursday evening. He was caught on a hot mic saying he was asked about his approach because Biden is under pressure to force Israel to back away, and they're using humanitarian aid, et cetera, et cetera. But then on this hot mic, we hear Joe Biden saying that he is ready to have a, quotation mark here, a come to Jesus meeting with Netanyahu. So, and of course, that phrase, when you hear it, it is, I'm going to tell Netanyahu what he has to do. I'm the boss here.
Right.
And so that kind of came up on the weekend. You know, does Biden have a red line here? So this, he was in an MSNBC interview, and here's what Biden had to say. Cut number one.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after.
Look, the president and I have agreed that we have to destroy Hamas. We can't leave a quarter of the Hamas terror army in place. They're there in Rafah. This would be equivalent to saying, you know, after the Allies fought back, gone through Normandy, went through Germany, and you'd say, well, we'll leave a quarter of the Nazi army in place and we won't go into Berlin, the last stronghold. So I think that if the president means by that, that we should first enable the safe departure of the civilian population from Rafah before we go in. We agree with that. We don't need any prompting.
I hope you guys noticed there that President Biden is using the term, we can't have 30,000 civilians, Palestinian civilians. That he is bought into or knowingly wants to use that, and that is a total misconception of what's going on. As the Israelis have pointed out, that 30,000 figure comes from Hamas, the Hamas right. health agency, and it includes the Hamas terrorists that Israel is killing.
Right.
You cannot kind of lump them in with civilians. So there's Biden using the language of the left to describe what's going on.
You can't use that 30,000 number unless you are buying into the propaganda
yes.
of Hamas, which is that's what it is.
Yes.
It is propaganda to try to win the perception war
mm-hmm.
and to put pressure on Israel to stop. I like what Netanyahu said. We don't need any prompting
mm-hmm.
from the Biden administration. He's being kind of nice, but Netanyahu's saying, we know what we're doing
yes.
and we're not going to stop until we root out every last terrorist. Hamas terrorist.
Yes. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% of women reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. And that's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred, and we thank you again for supporting us and listening to us every day here on American Family Radio. We get a lot of 8 Days of Hope volunteers in town and in our area. 8 Days of Hope, of course, has a big project in Amory, Mississippi this week. And that's about 20 miles, 25 miles from where we sit. And so we welcome everybody who's here for that project. Alice and I are going down at lunch down there.
Are you really?
Yeah. Don't know what
you're
I'm going to be.
You're going to swing the hammer?
Don't know. I don't know what they're going to make me do or, you know, what they're going to have me do. Just stay clear. I'm sure that people watch you out. Steve Tiber, the director, the founder, you know, he used to say, well, even if you don't have any skill, you can come and.
Yeah, you can tear walls out. You can haul lumber.
Yeah, you can do things that require no skill at all.
Right. So that's what you expect to be doing.
Yeah, whatever
Nothing
it is.
Nothing that requires skill.
Yeah. Just hope anyway, so we're going to be doing that. But I know a lot of people are, you know, are volunteering.
Yeah.
From our area, but they're also from across the country.
Right.
That are in town.
Some couples from Michigan were here for a tour on Friday.
Yes.
They came down. And and as Steve Tiber has said so many times, I think he's, at least 80% of the people who have volunteered through the years have heard about projects through and 8 Days of Hope through AFR.
Yeah.
Right.
And what they're doing is tornadoes struck the area over a year ago.
Yes.
I think it was. And so the damage that was done to the community, they're there, 8 Days of Hope, to work on restoration, rebuilding, those kinds of projects. You know about those kinds of projects, don't you, Ed?
Yes.
I do, too. I watch HGTV. Some.
I am also a non-skill person. I'm always amazed at people who post things on Facebook or what have you that are – talented carpenters.
Me too.
I mean, I just admire that. But I'm not that person.
These guys who know and ladies who know how to do carpentry and know how to do plumbing and know how to do electrical, work. Just that's like you might as well be a sport NBA player to me.
To me, it's like magic. It's like real magic. I go, wow, you made that. You created that.
Right. You mean to tell me you put all that wiring in and now it works and the house is lit up?
Listen.
That's amazing.
I just am amazed when someone can get crown, you know, molding to
fit
perfectly, you know.
Right. And then the house shifts. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hey, back to Israel for just a moment. We were talking there. So just to reset maybe of those who are listening now, there's been some contention, would you call it that, between Biden and Netanyahu about our relationship and how much we're going to support Israel and where we stand as U.S. Is that – how would you frame it right now?
Well, I think the tension is this. Inside the Democratic Party, there is growing pressure on Biden basically to withdraw support for Israel. you have a large pro-Palestinian faction inside. It's manifesting itself through,
the anti-Semitism.
The Arab population in Michigan, they're getting people to write uncommitted on the primary ballots. And they were quite successful in Michigan and some other states. And there's prediction. We have another round of primaries tomorrow, including Washington State. And this group, kind of Rashida Tlaib, who is the Palestinian Arab member of Congress from Michigan, kind of leading this charge. And they were very vocal during the State of the Union address. So Biden has this pressure inside his party. He also, there are young people on campuses. Anti-Semitism is growing on our campuses. That's a group of people that the Democratic Party depends on for voting. So he's got that. But he also has concerns about he can't be perceived to be totally turning against Israel either, because there are a lot of supporters of Israel in this country. And that led to another exchange. Biden is saying that Netanyahu doesn't even have the support of his own people to carry on in this way in Gaza until it's finished. And Netanyahu took issue to that this morning in the interview with Fox and Friends. Cut number two.
That's over 90% supported my policy of opposing a Palestinian state being rammed down Israel's throat. That's the vote we had the other day. So when people say, well, we have to have talk with Netanyahu because he's holding back the prospect of this wondrous peace with a Palestinian state, you don't have an issue with me. You have an issue with the entire people of Israel. They're really united as never before in uniting to destroy Hamas and ensure that we don't have another Palestinian terror state like the one they had in Gaza that could threaten the state of Israel.
At the moment, the issue is the southern Gaza city of Rafah. That's kind of the last large city that Israel has to deal with. Hamas terrorists are there. They have to eliminate them.
And the remains of their leadership.
And the remains of their leadership. And that's what Netanyahu says. We cannot allow Hamas to regroup, reform again. You also may have detected in that comment there, they are not going to allow for a two-state solution involving Gaza.
Right.
That's never going to happen again. One of the goals of this war is to make sure that Hamas never regroups and is allowed to take control of Gaza again. That is 180 degrees to what Biden and the State Department, the U.S. State Department, is saying. There's got to be a two-state solution in here somewhere.
Wasn't Yasser Arafat 25 years ago with Bill Clinton, I think it was, yeah. Wasn't he offered a two-state solution?
Yes,
he was.
And the even with the Israeli prime minister, I remember they were, what was his name? Before Netanyahu.
Was it Yitzhak Rabin or who?
No, it was after him. Anyway.
Shimon Peres?
No. Anyway, this would have been probably in the 90s. And Yasser Arafat turned it down.
It was Menachem Begin.
That goes back way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It may have been Menachem Begin. Are you talking about Camp David?
Uh-huh. I am.
Okay.
Was it Begin? Is that his name?
There's, I'm going back.
I want to say it started with a B.
Ehud Olmert, Ariel Sharon.
Barak.
Oh, Ehud. Well,
No. This guy was an army general. Anyway, it was with Yasser Arafat.
Maybe
I don't see him on there. Anyway.
Shimon Peres might have been.
No, it wasn't him. Which one of them was assassinated?
Well, Menachem Begin, that begins with a B, but that's way back to Jimmy Carter.
I'm talking about in the 90s. This fellow was an army general, and then he became prime minister. Anyway, the point is that Yasser Arafat, on behalf of the Palestinian people, was offered a two-state solution, or at least 99% of what he had wanted, and then he ultimately said no.
Yep, turned it down. Because, and this is what Netanyahu and others argue, they really don't want a two-state solution. Right. They want to get rid of Israel.
There are political issues and there are political / spiritual issues, and Israel falls into the latter. Mm-hmm. So political issues are issues like, do we spend money on, when I was in my economics class at Boston College. On guns or butter, do you spend on military or do you spend on welfare and all those kind of things? Those are just ordinary political issues. Mm-hmm. But what we are seeing in the United States, but also in Western Europe, we are seeing a kind of two-headed monster arise of hatred towards Israel and the Jews in general, not just those in Israel, and hatred towards Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
These two things are kind of happening simultaneously. And now they do have political roots because there are political issues, but this is a spiritual issue. And really,
I found it.
This hatred towards Israel / Christianity is almost completely located on the left.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of the two. I know there are, you know, Nazis and fascists that hate the Jews, but on the left, I don't say the Democratic Party per se, because I'm sure there are more moderate, old-fashioned liberals still in the Democratic Party.
But a lot of Jews.
A lot of Jews.
Yeah.
There are on the radical left, this Marxist view of the world is where you find this two-headed monster.
Those are the people that hate the Jews, not the Christians.
Right.
This is, Allison, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. The left's always saying, you know, we're anti-Semites. We, especially evangelical Christians, are anti-Semites.
How do you get that?
And you go, And you go on, and the left uses this in, they use this in political campaigns, presidential. You'll hear this, oh, right-wingers, man, they hate the Jews. You know, I guess they go, they're trying to harken back to the KKK days and, because the KKK was anti-Semitic, you know.
Right.
So, and we're the modern-day KKK to these people.
To Southern Poverty Law Center, those
those people. We just don't have hoods, white hoods.
Right.
Other than that, we're the same people. That's the way many on the left look at us.
Right.
Look at people like us. But we were talking, and I said, they really don't know what they're talking about. These people who accuse us of being anti-Semitic, especially the evangelical Christians in America are the best friends Israel has and the best friends Jews have in the world. That's just honest truth. And now a lot of it is related to what the Bible says.
Right.
Yes, it's not in a vacuum, but still, I'm just saying the treatment of Jews, both here and abroad, by evangelical Christians is very sympathetic. Okay. By the way, the fellow's name was Ehud Barak.
Ehud Barak.
Ehud Barak. It was in 2000 with Bill Clinton at the Camp David summit.
Mm-hmm.
That Yasser Arafat was basically offered a two-state solution, mm-hmm. a Palestinian state, and he rejected it. Now, or at least it was reported he was offered 99% of what he wanted,
what he had
asked for.
Mm-hmm.
The point is these people don't want a two-state solution. They want Israel driven into the sea.
Right.
Which is a metaphor for kill them all. Get rid of all the Jews. The Jews are even in the minds of these rabid Palestinian groups, and Hamas, for example, Hezbollah, and even just generally the fundamentalist Arab world that surrounds Israel, is subhuman. The Jews are subhuman, and they are evil and wicked, and they deserve to die. That's what they grow up with.
Right.
So I don't know how. So Israel, that's what Israel's facing. So you have to be completely and utterly in control with power and military might. You can't show weakness or you will die. The reason, and you know what? Israel's in a absolutely no-win situation from a public relations standpoint. Because if they want to cater to public relations, then they'll be slaughtered. They'll be the end of their nation. Will come to be because they care about how people think about them.
Right.
I'm serious because I mentioned this last week, and I hate to say this, but this is a death match. It's either Israel survives or Hamas survives. One or the other. Somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose, and they're going to control the Israel in the area. So Israel cannot let – they have to be what it – see, in the eyes of the world, many in the world, Israel's wrong because these Palestinian people are defenseless. And they're having their homes destroyed and their way of life destroyed, and they're starving them. Okay, well, that's – such is war. So Israel can say, well, you know, we don't want to be perceived in that way, so we're going to back off. We're not going to do anything. We're going to stop militarily. Okay, well, you do that. Then guess what? Then guess 6 months from now, a year, you're back at it. Hamas is bombing you again, and they're killing your people again, and they're threatening your airport and your way of life, and they're throwing bombs into Tel Aviv. You want to go through that again?
Right.
In 6 months, because you care now about what people think about your the perception? So I'm just saying, when I say death match, it's us or them. All right? It's like an arm wrestle. Somebody's gonna slam down the arm
right
on the table, and Israel's saying, it ain't going to be us. We're not dying here. Our country's not going to cease to exist. And I think Israel has that. They have to have that mentality. If they don't, then they will be, Israel will be wiped out. This is a situation where it's no win. And the whole world, the UN's against Israel, mm-hmm. the Arab Muslim world is against Israel, right or wrong. They don't care about, the Arab Muslim world does not care necessarily about, if they do at all, about whether Israel's in the right to defend themselves.
Right.
That's why you saw the call for ceasefire the day after Hamas slaughtered 1,200 people in such a brutal fashion. I mean, the barbarians were kinder than these Hamas assailants that went over and slaughtered these people in Israel. To read about that, it just turns your stomach.
And the UN had a report on just how bad.
The UN?
Last week.
Yeah, the UN, who's anti-Israel. And so
we can't even talk about it on the air, what they did to women, Israeli women.
No, we can't talk about it. It's too disgusting. But so Israel now, you know, they have to go in and do whatever they can to clean it up, do the most that they can to clean it up and to have security going forward. But every move they make is second guess by Biden now.
Yeah.
And America is the best friend Israel has. And if we're but even Netanyahu is saying, listen, I'm paraphrasing basically what I got from his interview was, we can't take dictates from Biden on how we handle our security and the war. We can't do that. We can't be second guessed every other day about what we're doing and how we're doing it. Okay. So said all that, so are innocent people dying? If you want to call innocent people, the Palestinian people living in Gaza who aren't combatants, that is true. They are. They're collateral damage, as they say. I don't mean to sound callous, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Collateral damage means outside the two warring armies.
That is happening, and their homes are being destroyed. That is happening, yes. This is a war, and Israel's retaliating, and this is what happens in war. So, but for these people to call for a ceasefire almost a day after Hamas slaughtered all those people, I'm going, who in the world does this? If we had Mexican drug cartels come over into El Paso and go home to home and murder 1,200 people, slaughter them and butcher Americans like that, do you think, and then the next day the world's saying ceasefire? What do you think Americans would say? Americans would say,
we can't say on the air what Americans would say.
Right. I'll clean it up and say, heck no. Mm-hmm. We're not calling for a ceasefire. You're not going to put that kind of, burden on us. We demand justice that our military find these people, hunt them down, and kill them.
Listen, why doesn't Joe Biden say, in an interview, we're calling on Hamas right now to lay down its arms and surrender.
Give up the hostages.
Give up the hostages and face international justice. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he say that? Mm-hmm. because that would stop the killing of innocent civilians in the midst of this war. But he doesn't. He puts it all on Israel. And I'm with you. Israel cannot stop. They have got to root out Hamas once and for all. Otherwise, this is going to happen over and over and
over again.
They'll
just have to take the international PR hit.
Yes.
Is the way they look at it, I think. And so,
because the same thing would happen again. If Hamas in 3 years had built up its forces and does the same exact thing, Israel would have to go back into Gaza and root them out. And 3 days later, there'd be calls for a ceasefire because the same thing would repeat. I call on the Biden administration right now. I know you're listening. Okay. You demand that Hamas lay down its arms and surrender and turn over the hostages and end this bloody affair and face the international justice for what you've done.
Yeah. Yes.
That's not going to happen, is it?
Okay. So the bottom line is the fundamental thing here is spiritual, quite frankly.
Yes, it is.
The same people that hate America, the far left, they view Israel the same way they view the U.S. They're colonialist. They are oppressors. They're white people, even though the Jews are...
The Middle Eastern.
They're Middle Eastern. Now, you'll find from some Poles, Eastern European, you'll find some Jews who are white, but you'll find Ethiopian Jews, I mean, who are black. So, I mean, they're different colors, but they're basically Middle Eastern. But they view it as the oppressor, okay, the oppressor. In the same way they would say, okay, Europeans took over the land of the indigenous people, and therefore Americans are living on stolen land. This is how these people think.
Right.
They're going to say that the Jews are living on stolen land, and therefore whatever happens to them, they deserve. They deserve it. If the Palestinians or Hamas butchered 1,200 people, they may not say this out loud, but some of them will. They'll say, "Well, that's what they got. What they got coming to them."
Yeah, there was at least one Harvard professor, I think, who got fired because after Hamas did this, and it was during the week after this, he was in front of his class and said, "I felt so wonderful when this happened." So
anyway, that's what's going on in the world. It is spiritual. Brad, how would you do? I mean, when I say it's spiritual, I know a lot of people may be listening. They're a little bit spooked by that language. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say go back and read Genesis. God gave this land to the Jewish people. In fact, you can read the deed to the land goes far beyond where Israel is today. And they have a tiny portion. And in the name of trying to keep peace with the Arab world, Israel has given up even more land. I mean, you talk about the West Bank. They gave all that up. Nazareth is under Arab control. Ramallah, all of that area. Jericho.
They're allowed to self-govern.
Yes.
The Palestinians are.
Yeah. But Israel gave it up. And then what was it in 2005? They gave up Gaza. There were Jewish people who lived there they were prosperous. They were farmers. They were fishermen. And Israel told those Jewish people, get out of there. We're giving it to the Palestinians. 2 years later.
That was a major mistake.
Hamas took over there. And Israel has been dealing with that.
Yeah. Israel probably should have just kept. Yes. I don't know who. I know they were thinking, okay, we'll give this land to the Palestinian people and let them govern themselves, and everybody's happy. We're segregated.
Yeah.
But then Hamas began to build up and they began to smuggle weapons in, and we see what's happened.
Yeah.
Probably been better in retrospect that Israel just kept that land because they would have kept it secure. Another thing, somebody made this point a few weeks ago I read, and that is this. Had the Palestinian people in built up Gaza, it could have been like a vacation hotspot.
Yeah.
It could have been a Dubai type situation.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's on the Mediterranean. It's got beautiful beaches and everything. But
instead, what Hamas did is They took money that was coming in and built tunnels to prosecute their terror war against Israel. Remember the scenes of them breaking apart the pipes for the water lines and using the materials for their war against Israel.
Yeah.
But I've heard several people say that this could have been a wealthy, prosperous area of the Middle East.
Yes.
But they were under the control of Hamas, who exists for one reason and one reason only, and that is to eliminate the nation of Israel and the Jewish people living there. And that's why Netanyahu and Israel cannot stop until this terror network is done.
But I encourage people to read your Bible. Israel came back into existence in 1948 out of sympathy for the 6 million Jews that were killed during World War II.
Was that in prophecy?
Yes. Israel has to be a nation when the Lord returns.
And it is.
And it is. And that's why I'm not sure how this is going to happen, but God is going to take care of Israel. Since it came a nation again in 48, there have been wars against them. They've been outnumbered. But God saw to it that they always win, and Israel will win this war too.
So it's really, the story of the Jews is a confirmation of the authenticity and accuracy of the Bible.
Amen.
That's right.
Man, I said that good.
You did.
I can only remember how
well
I said,
said
that. Okay, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.